Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Adventure Zone Zone Zone. It's a podcast within a podcast about a podcast within a podcast. This is also our final episode of Taz Talk. Thanks for joining us for this last one. First of all, Chelsea, I really enjoyed the Amnesty Live show.
Oh, my God.
Did you listen to it?
I did.
I'm really glad that Griffin got to turn into a car like in Turbo Teen.
Oh my God. I don't know what I expected, but I love that he played himself, first of all.
Yeah, that was really something.
And that they kept making references to Clint, the actual thing.
It was extremely confusing.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
I loved it. And I'm glad that they're open to doing like more things in the Amnesty universe. Although I can't say that I understand really how Bigfoot stole my car and it had my birthday. I don't know that I understand that game, but I appreciate that it was a thing.
Yeah, I was a little fuzzy on some of the rules too, but I think honestly for the way they conduct live shows, mm-hmm. if they're going to keep doing these little one-off games,
yeah,
I don't think it really matters if I understand the rules. It's just like the rules are just there to... They're like an improv. Yeah, they're like an improv prop or something. They insert randomness into the narrative.
Yeah, well, it aids them in deciding, well, I want to do a thing. Am I successful? Which is the most, like, the simplest kind of way to utilize tabletop RPG elements in, like, a live improv comedy show. I think they've really found a good method of doing a one-shot, you know, game like this, and also tell a story. Prioritizing telling a story, but using game elements to help facilitate that story.
Yeah, there are a lot of these, like, you know, D&D has a lot of rule books, mm-hmm. but there are a lot of RPGs, a lot of them that are built off that Powered by the Apocalypse, or no, not Powered by the Apocalypse. Whichever one Monster of the Week is built off of. Isn't it Powered by the Apocalypse.
I think it is. Well, maybe. See, okay, dang it, both of those things are familiar, but now I don't know... Because whatever it is that... I think Powered by the Apocalypse is the one where you have 2d6 and you have your failure, mixed success, full success, whatever.
Yeah.
What they use in the live show, I don't know what it's called, but they did the same thing in the space opera one where it's...
Yeah.
You have two characteristics. They each have a number and you have to roll 1d6 or 2d6. See, and that's the thing. I'm not certain because sometimes there's like... success or like a full success or like a hella good success if you do like 3 die or something. I don't know.
I didn't follow all those rules either, but that's okay.
Yeah, but I liked that it was just you know, like immediately you know if you passed or failed because you either uh-huh. rolled your number or lower or above your number. So, you know, did we want to skip to the very end of the Adventure Zone Zone Zone? When they were talking about how they were going to implement, or what they learned from Monster of the Week and doing all the live shows and how they're going to implement it as they switch back to doing D&D, but, you know, focusing more on storytelling. No, I was just going to say, I was going to save this till the end, but fuck it, let's go.
Let's go. The comment about taking that, like, decide on an action and then choose a role from it, I think is really important because, I don't know, it's hard. If you're just playing around the table, I think it can be difficult to... Sometimes I feel like I want to say to the DM, speaking about D&D specifically, like, I want to do a perception check or I want to do this other check instead of just saying, like, oh, I look around or I want to try to whatever, because I feel like... In some way, it does kind of help the DM understand the action that what you have in mind. I think I actually do think if I were to just say to our DM, I want to do this thing, there's some cases in which I think, like, I don't know if it would be immediately clear to him what the check would be or, like, what I had in mind for the skill that would take. So it is kind of like a back and forth.
Yeah. I think what I like... And maybe this is because I'm more, like, of a novice kind of D&D person. But, like, it's hard for me to conceptually rationalize the things that I want to do in roleplay and how they would translate to D&D. And I think that maybe this is what the boys are kind of going for, where they describe what they want to do, and then maybe they propose that it would be this check or that check. And then the DM is like, okay, yeah, I agree, that is that check. Or, no, I think it's this check instead, you know?
Yeah,
or,
I think that happens a lot in actual play. That's how the kind of, like, back and forth ends up going down.
Yeah, but I think what makes it really great is, you know, it's a back and forth, but also the player isn't just like, I want to do this. And then they just kind of dump it on the DM, you know?
Yeah.
You're proposing a thing, and you're also making a recommendation of what you think it is. And to be, like, super honest, in, like, leadership, this is what I've been, like, drilling my nurses, because I'm a nurse, and I have, like, a team of nurses. They're all, like, baby nurses, because they just graduated in, like, May, and I'm like, okay, if you have a problem, don't just tell me the problem. Tell me the problem, but also what your proposed solutions are, because, like, you can't just dump things on me and make me do all the thinking, you know? So...
That's a good comparison.
Yeah. It's an important leadership thing, but also, like, it's just good communication.
Yeah, definitely. I think another thing when they were talking about, like, what they're going to carry forward from Amnesty back into D&D was, like, Travis was talking about how, like, oh, yeah, Griffin made, like, a map of Kepler, and it, like, really brought the game alive to me. That's because they never fucking used maps in Balance. That's what D&D is supposed to be like. They're supposed to be maps that you look like that make it feel like a real place that you can reference.
Yeah. I love that you noticed that. I was thinking, like, well, he made a map for the 11th hour, but I was also thinking, like, well, I never looked at the map, really, because either, you know, I'm just listening to it and I'm doing other stuff. But as a player... Like, I really enjoy when there is a map, and especially, so in, like, our current campaign, our DM did, like, this whole thing with, I forget what it's called. What is he using?
Oh, we're doing, it's like Waterdeep Dungeon of the Mad Mage.
That's its full name?
Yeah. It's, like, it's part of a series, so the first one was Waterdeep Dragon Heist, and then the one we're doing is Waterdeep, Dungeon of the Mad Mage.
Oh, okay.
I think that's what it's called. I might be fudging some letters.
Well, let me...
Chelsea, we're never going to get to the fucking bottom of that dungeon.
Well, I know, but we've
played for multiple hours, and we're still on, like, one square of the first floor. We're never going to make it.
Well,
we're going to be 80 by the time we get down there.
We're going to be level 6 by the time we get down there, because at this rate, if one floor is supposed to be one level and it takes us 4 or more sessions to clear one floor, it doesn't help that... Okay, I brought it up because, like, it has maps, and it also our DM invested in dynamic lighting. So it's really exciting because we can't see the map as we're navigating around. It relies on our perception, dark sight.
Yeah, dark vision. What have you?
Yeah, yeah. Which is so cool because it like like there will be furniture or pillars in a room and it'll cast a shadow so we can't actually see, and sometimes monsters will pop out or whatever. So
it's really cool. Interesting. There's a lot of different ways to approach play in terms of like maps or no maps or whatever. Yes. Because I love me a good map. Like, a lot. But I've also played, like, more Theater of Mind before, like they did for the Balance arc, and it's fucking fun. I think I've mentioned this on the podcast before, but, like, every other time I've been playing D&D, my memories of playing are, like, looking down at the figurines or down at, like, Roll20 and seeing, like, a top-down view. Mm. But when I played Theater of Mind, like, I have first-person memories of what I was imagining the scenes looking like, and it's really cool.
Yeah.
It was just, like... kind of different. It gets kind of confusing because you lose track of where people are, but like it was just a matter of like, hey DM, can you re-describe who's close to me, whatever, and from the DM's position, because I did this a little bit with you guys, it actually isn't that hard to just like keep track of a battlefield in your mind, which I was pleased to discover.
You know, I hope that they do share with us their map of the school though, just because I'm kind of curious. Also, I'm like very excited for High Adventure Hogwarts superhero magic school.
Well, we're really jumping ahead to the end here.
I know we are. Okay, let's talk about Amnesty. Well,
okay, so flipping all the way back up to the beginning, now the joke about Duck's real name makes sense, I guess.
I didn't realize it was a joke. I thought it was just like a really Appalachian kind of hometown sort of name.
Yeah, I know. I mean, like Justin said, like his target audience is... He's old. He's, like, almost 40, isn't he?
I guess.
Which,
I guess
I'm almost 30, so.
Yeah. Did you listen to Mabim Bam this week?
Yes, I did.
and how he went on a whole rant with half of his voice, but he went on a rant about Gallagher. Just random af Gallagher, like, I had to look up who Gallagher was, because I was like, who is this person?
I didn't know who that was either, although the name is familiar, but yeah. Maybe, yeah, I don't know.
And, like, melons, I think he smashes melons, I don't know. He mentioned Carrot Top, and I'm like, I know Carrot Top. But even Carrot Top is, like, before our time a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's weird. It's like, I have in my mind, when I was little, I was aware of Carrot Top. And then there was, like, a 20-year gap where I forgot he existed. And then recently, I've become re-aware of Carrot Top. And it's kind of a weird bell curve.
I think it's because he got really buff and angry.
So he, like, he became a meme or something? I don't know. Yeah, just, like, re-entered the millennial consciousness.
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, we're going wildly off topic.
Okay.
Let's write it back to the Adventure Zone.
I like that, and okay, maybe this is a little bit more kind of, this is a general observation. Travis picks the questions from a Bim Bam, and I liked that he got to pick the questions for the Adventure Zone too. Because to his credit, he tries to pick questions, one, that are thematically put together so that he can answer a variety of people. Also because it kind of organizes the flow of things so that they know, like, after they finish this one, where they're going to go next. But also I like that he kind of has questions for everyone.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
I like that too. Yeah. It's so funny to hear them answer these questions because it's like, they keep like cutting themselves off. Like, we can't keep talking about this. We have to move on. And I understand that it's like, they're trying to keep it within an hour, but also I think they've said this before, they feel weird about going on at length about their own thing.
Yeah, but go ahead.
I want to hear them go on about it, though. Like, whenever they cut themselves off, I'm like, you don't have to do that. Please keep talking about this thing, because I love you guys, and I love your thing.
Griffin mentioned that he was considering doing, like, a tell-all for the, the Max Fun Drive.
And I'm like, please. About, like, the lore.
Please! I would love to hear the lore. When I heard that he edited their first entry into Sylvain so much because it was so lore-heavy, I was like, oh my god, no. I want to know more. I want to know more about Sylvain. What got cut out? What did we miss? Because, like, he was talking about characters where, and that was his whole thing, is he had all of these characters, but if they didn't choose to spend time with those characters, they weren't going to get developed. They went off by the wayside because the player characters just didn't have time to interact with them. So, like, Woodbridge being a whole thing that never got explored, or Pigeon, or even, what is his name? Officer, FBI guy.
Dewey? Oh, Stern.
Stern and Bigfoot. That could have happened a lot sooner, but they just didn't have time to spend with them. So.
Yeah, okay. I totally fucking missed the fact that Barclay and Stern were a couple, which I can't believe I didn't pick. It's like, I fucking pulled the, you know, like, I saw them in the hot tub together in the finale, and I'm like, wow, look at these gals being pals, I guess. Like, why did I not pick up on this before?
Yeah, well, to be fair, I did too. Because they didn't really have a whole lot of, other than, he was looking for Barclay, like, this whole time, but we didn't get to see them, like,
I know, God. Like, because Griffin's right. It's fucking perfect. And I now that I'm thinking about it, I wish we had seen more of them together, because that is a fucking fun, cute idea.
Yeah, but at the same time, though, it is, like, Griffin, he had a line about, like, well, if you don't talk to them, I can't do all that development in the background, because it's just me talking to myself. So I think it is really hard to, like, have these non-player characters as couples. I love them dearly.
But it happened, how did he do it in balance? Because we had a bunch of, maybe not a bunch, I don't know, that's like,
I can think of one. Like,
well, hang on, now I'm like, can I remember the names of NPCs from the balance arc? Carrie and Killian, obviously.
Oh, two, okay, I can think of two.
And then the race car girls, whose names Dryads, I can't remember for some reason.
Bird and Ram.
Yes. And I am trying to make the comparison between, like, it might be because Griffin let the player action drive the story and, like, the scenes so much more in Amnesty.
Yeah.
Whereas in Balance, the players that were just kind of, like, almost like side characters in the stories of these characters that the arcs were based around.
Absolutely,
I think... I think it really worked. I don't know how it felt to be the player in that case, but I feel like as the audience, we all got really attached to a lot of these NPCs. And again, this comes back to the, like Griffin railroading versus Griffin playing it really fast and loose. There are obvious pros and cons to each style of doing the show.
Yeah.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what Travis brings for graduation.
That's what they were talking about how it was really hard for them. Like, when they were doing the Adventure Zone versus, not versus, but, like, Balance, in comparison to Amnesty, how Balance was leading up to this big story in the end. Like, every single thing was leading up to a big thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, I mean, it had to be real-worlded because Griffin had a story that he had to put out and put together and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Amnesty, I agree with Travis thinking that every, like, little, every monster of the week, every week that they were fighting a monster, it was very episodic, and it didn't feel, and we mentioned this multiple times throughout the whole series, saying that these things felt disjointed, that we weren't sure what the big overarching story was going to be. And the way that this game is designed is it doesn't necessarily have or need to have like a big overarching picture. Like this kind of game is designed to go on extended forever as long as you can keep coming up with monsters, you know? So I think
it's, I mean, in a way so is D&D, but like it really is a matter of like how much Griffin wanted to take the reins. And like this is not a dig at Griffin at all, but Amnesty is got a lot of not plot holes, but I don't know, loose ends to it. Things are kind of like
didn't have time.
Yeah, things are kind of confusing in some instances. And for me, this is like, yeah, all you people who complained about Griffin railroading, how do you like this, assholes? Like, this is how it is. This is the trade-off between, like, letting the players have more agency and kind of creating a pretty strict narrative. It's just like, that's, I don't know, like, maybe with a lot of practice, there is some kind of, like, perfect balance between those two things. But it is going to be a concern anytime they try to do a new campaign, I think.
Yeah. They used the catchphrase balance too soon. Yeah.
I love how Travis compared it to a rebound relationship. I thought that was a really good metaphor.
I like that they all talked about how they were feeling going into, and I think we talked about this too, about how They finished this great big arc. They had a book deal going on, and then they went off to start the new thing, and they were looking for the same notes that they ended this big thing with, and like putting a lot of pressure on a new relationship when that's not how relationships grow, and that's not how they, you know, start or thrive. So they put a lot of pressure on themselves.
I honestly think that some of my favorite episodes of Amnesty and some of the funniest episodes were the final, like, three or four episodes. Mm-hmm. And I really think it's because, like, they were finally getting comfortable with those characters and they were finally, like, comfortable in the world. It was ending, so maybe some of the pressure was off. And, like, I know the 20 or 30 episode mark is when I really started to love Balance. So it was kind of to be expected, like, oh yeah, now this is kicking in for me and these characters are starting, I'm starting to become attached to these characters.
Yeah.
Right. It's ending, you know?
It took us 30 hours to get to that point, but yeah.
But I mean, like, that's the thing about Balance is like, it took 30 hours to get to that point, and then for another 30 to 50 hours, it was like a blissful experience. It was like worth getting through it, you know?
Yeah. You know, that being said, though, did Griffin say that the length of Balance, he never wanted to do a campaign that long again?
Yeah, it's probably, I can definitely understand that. I mean, it might be just like a matter of fan reaction or like the reception to a different campaign or how it feels for them to play, because like, I don't know, maybe they might do something that like everybody loves it, they love it, and they have the energy to take it farther.
Yeah.
Or it has maybe, to be,
Oh, you go ahead.
No, that's kind of the end of my thought.
Oh. I was just thinking that it has to be like, you know, the perfect kind of combination of all of those things, because I'm sure that it has to be fun for them to keep doing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think now there's also an element of it has to also kind of make money so that they can keep doing it.
I mean, so far it's been okay, because like, I think people who were really into Balance, I think they like are hanging on, you know, they trust the McElroys to do their thing, I guess. I don't know. That's how I'm kind of feeling, is like, obviously I didn't like Amnesty as much as I liked the Balance arc.
Yeah.
But I'm like looking forward to like, what are they going to do next? I'm still excited because I'm like, I don't know. I think they're good at what they do and I'm excited to see how this next thing goes. And I'm also super, super excited for them to go back into a world that is less focused on realism.
Yes.
And I think that was something about Amnesty that was kind of like a drag, to put it one way. Like, I think their sense of humor, like even with Mabim Bam is all about like the advice that they give is totally outlandish and not at all what would happen in the real world in a lot of instances. Yeah. And that's like where their sense of humor really shines, is when they can be really absurd. And Kepler, West Virginia was a realer place than Faerun.
Yeah.
And I think going back into a fantasy setting where they can just say whatever the fuck and it's fine and they don't have to conform to, like, the truth of the world, I think it's going to let them stretch their comedy wings a lot easier.
I think so, too. Griffin touched on it a little bit when he was saying that working in a real world with real stakes and also operating, like, an authority figures
in the cops could come and arrest you.
Yeah, like having a law enforcement, like, it was complicated. And it, I think, I don't know, maybe it was after Balance and after they did their mini arcs that they were like, we need to do something really fresh, really new, really different.
Yeah.
And they kind of just went completely 180.
That's possible.
So, but I do agree, though, that they do need some level of fantasy or just not real life. We listen to them because we want to escape real life.
Yeah.
So, like, we don't want it too real, you know? So I think if Balance was, like, the extreme, extreme like, level of fantasy, and then Amnesty was, like, the extreme level of, like, realism, maybe we'll just, like, eventually keep swinging back and forth until we reach, like, a middle.
Maybe, yeah. I just want them to have, I think they need to have enough room for the world to get really weird. Yes. Like, Tom Baudet City weird, you know what I mean?
That's a really,
like,
good...
Like, stinky hand syndrome. Oh, I have one, too. Let me, like, smell, like, your brand or whatever. Like, this, some of the shit from the Balance arc was so fucking funny, and it was just because there were no closed doors on the improv. It was like, you could say anything. This is a fantasy world. Elves and magic exist.
You know... And, oh, go ahead.
Yeah. No, you go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, so... Is now that Travis is DMing, is he also going to be the one to edit? Because I do remember, like, for a while, Griffin was saying that he had to kind of, like, he didn't want to, like, filter them or anything, but he had to kind of keep it on track, because otherwise, like, editing it, first, it would be really long if he kept all of it, but otherwise, like, editing took a really long time, because he had to figure out, like, well, what can I cut, because this thing is too long, you know?
Yeah. So, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't remember. Did he edit the mini arcs that he didn't DM?
I think he did, but that was just for efficiency, I think. Because they were limited to, like, three
sessions. Oh, I see what you're saying. You know? That makes sense.
Yeah, because there's so many things that he, as the editor, like, added in there. Like, music, for example, or, like, sound effects.
This is really interesting, because with Griffin being the DM and the editor, there's kind of like this sense of him being like the auteur director, where he has like control over both the narrative and the atmosphere and like the production. I actually think it would be really interesting if Travis was the DM and Griffin was editor. The kind of the production would be a little bit more collaborative, probably, might end up being really interesting and cool. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how that goes.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited that Travis finally gets, like, his chance to do, like, his DMing thing.
Well, did you ever listen to Taz Knights?
Yeah, I love Taz Knights.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, that's why I was like, I hope that he gets to do something, you know, bigger than Taz Knights, bigger than Dust, like, because he clearly likes it a lot.
Yeah.
And like, seeing Griffin have fun, too, is just really... I love it a lot.
I know. It's, like, it's... Being the DM, it depends on who you are, I think. Because for me, planning the thing is the best. I fucking love planning an adventure. Actually running it is like harrowing and exhausting. And I've heard other people who I've talked to about this say like, well, actually, no, the planning parts are drag for me. I like running the thing.
Yeah.
And so I definitely get it when Griffin is like, I can't wait to not be the DM, because it's a lot of work. It's really hard and it's like very effortful and it's like stressful. But making your creation and bringing it to life is like so rewarding also. So it's definitely something that like you need to recharge from, even if you really love doing it. Probably that's true of any like big effortful creative endeavor.
As a cosplayer, yes. I do want to touch a little bit on the questions that we did get answered, because going into this, we had some pretty prominent questions and at least some of them got answered.
Yes.
We kind of sort of know why the Sylphs were banished from Sylvain.
Yeah, so kind of. Well, Amnesty Lodge is basically like a Sylph criminal colony.
Kind of.
Is that what I kind of got? Like, because it's like Griffin says some people, like, they just came over and they weren't allowed to come back, but other people were exiled for crimes they committed without, like, he was mentioning something about, like, siphoning too much energy, but if it, either that or some other, like, Sylvan law was broken, that means everyone, all the, like, Sylphs at Amnesty Lodge are criminals. That's, well, like, a hilarious idea.
I
like, what
figured...
do you think Danny did to get exiled? What do you think Barclay did? Like...
I felt it was kind of like Australia, where...
I know! It's yes, exactly. I just, like, adds this... I wish this had been explored during the campaign, because what a dimension this adds to everyone, all of the Sylph's characters, is like, oh, I have a really troubled past. You wouldn't have known that, but, like, I will... You know, it's just, like, it's hilarious.
Maybe, and that's kind of something that I wished would have happened with this campaign, is... You get a new monster, but maybe you get a new NPC that you also get to learn about that, like, teaches you more things about Sylvain. Like,
I suspect that Sylvain, because it was something that Griffin was just, like, totally making up whole cloth, and that he didn't have, like, the entire catalog of Forgotten Realms lore to...
tap
like
into?
Draw from I think I get the feeling that like what Sylvain was, and this is again not a dig at Griffin, the world building is hard and he has a lot of jobs, like I get the feeling that Sylvain just wasn't well enough developed for all of these NPCs to have had like the crime that they committed or whatever, like their whole individual backstory, because we don't know a lot about like how, like, what Sylvain was like, you know? Because they didn't go there that often, and, you know.
Well, that too, but also the players never actually asked. Like, they were so focused on on defeating the monster that they never actually had time to... Maybe they needed one more hot springs scene.
Yeah.
More downtime with the actual Sylphs. Because, like, most of the downtime was either spent, like, doing... a thing together or facing off with NPCs that weren't Sylphs or, you know, spending time elsewhere. It's just...
Yeah.
And this was my gripe about the whole thing from the very beginning, is that we introduced a whole brand new world and then did nothing with it, really. Because we were so focused on the real world, which was kind of, you know... I wanted to know more about Sylvain.
Yeah, it was... I think it was a pretty weird... set up, because I think Griffin really did want to focus on Kepler, not on Sylvain. Like he said a lot during this TTAZZ, this is a story about like rural Appalachia. And I think because of that, it was just kind of like, I can't think of another work of fiction that has this same quality, although I'm sure they exist and I just can't remember them right now. But just like, there is a fantasy world, but it's like really in the background. It's almost like... not really, but kind of magical realism. Like, there's magic, but it's kind of, you know, it's like taking a back seat.
Yeah, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know. Because the whole point of introducing a new world is that's the thing, that's the draw.
Yeah, it's a little strange. I think, I don't know, it was executed in a weird way. And I think, again, this is because Griffin did not have executive control over how the story was being told. And how the lore was being revealed. So
he really was at the mercy of, well, what do my players want to do? And the players never really saw investigating Sylvain as a priority, unfortunately, for us who are very curious about Sylvain.
And I think another problem is that format where you're just, like, making it up as you go along and letting other people have more agency in how the world is created. I don't know. I think that works really well with stuff that's just, like, batshit crazy and maybe not so much trying to develop a fully realized, like, human world.
Yeah.
Because, again, back to, like, those, like, success-failure, mixed success systems, there's another game that me and my friends used to play called Wilderness of Mirrors where, full disclosure, this was a small tabletop game that was meant to be about, like, Russian spies.
Cool.
But we never played that way. We would just, like, use it to make up the craziest story we could think of, and then we would all, like, pull, like, it was just kind of like an improv exercise, I guess, although, like, I've never had any, like, improv or theater experience at all. But it was just, like, we'd all sit around making up this fucking crazy, hilarious story together, and it wasn't, like, deep, it was funny.
Rachel, this and is I the think- most Rachel... activity. Like, oh my god,
it was great. Like, it was a really fun time, and it really was, like, perfect for I can't stop laughing at how crazy this is, and maybe not perfect for oh my god, I'm having a really touching moment, although we did have
some touching moments,
at least one kind of touching badass moment that I can think of, and it just kind of happened organically. So I think the problem might be both in the Monster of the Week game and in just, like, this tabletop podcast format in general is, like, trying to force the more dramatic elements instead of, like, leaning into the comedy and letting the dramatic elements
emerge.
Yeah, kind of be more emergent. And also, saying all this, I might totally be discounting how much Griffin put a lot of effort into making the balance arc dramatic. I don't know how, like, because, you know, it didn't start off that way. It got that way. And maybe Griffin tried really hard and put a lot of effort into it. Maybe it wasn't emergent, you know?
It got serious because he started doing monologues.
Yeah. A direct correlation. By the way, my fucking, I don't know who moved in upstairs from me, but, like, I imagine it as a child is just running back and forth.
I cannot hear them.
Okay, good. Listeners, if you can hear that, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to edit it out because I don't know how. It's just going to be in there.
Do I have any other notes?
I loved how they all took credit for the Thacker idea, which really spoke to how it came about pretty organically.
I loved that they tapped Thacker. I loved that Clint recognized that Thacker was introduced and then also not really investigated a whole lot.
We spent way more of this episode just kind of dunking on Amnesty than I thought we were going to, but, like, I really enjoyed a lot of their commentary and their insights about Amnesty and the storytelling process in general during this TTAZZ. Like, so many things that they said, I didn't, like, make a note, but, like, I was like, wow, I really like what you're saying, and it was great.
Yeah. Well, speaking of things that they said that I really loved, Griffin mentioned that the story is just, it's telling the story of folks who benefit from manufactured conflict.
Yes.
Which he said was very relevant to the story of West Virginia. And I was like, holy shit, that's really.
Yeah. I do not know much about the history of West Virginia or Appalachia, except recently my mom watched a documentary that was about, like, actually, I don't know if this is relevant, and I can only half remember what she was talking about. But I don't know what, like, historical facts Griffin was alluding to, but I can imagine them, and it makes Amnesty seem another layer deeper.
Yeah.
From what I'm just guessing at.
And that's why I want my Amnesty tell-all, because I want to go into, like, what did you mean by that, Griffin?
Yeah, that would be cool.
For the uninformed Californians on the other side of the country, like, what does that entail?
I really liked, I loved when they were talking about Ned's death and, like, how Clint felt about his character choices with Ned, especially when he was talking about how, like, Justin, like, stopped him from doing, like, this out-of-character hero moment, and that, like, made him, the way that affected the way he played Ned for the rest of the campaign, like, I thought that was so interesting and cool. And it's, like, really cool to see, I don't know, because sometimes it's not it's not obvious to me, like, how much they're getting in there and really, really, like, performing and enjoying what they do, and how much they're just like, well, we need to do this because we have this momentum here. And so it's really nice to hear them, like, how deeply they have thought about their characters and how much emotion they have about them. Like, that's always great.
I really like that too.
Yeah. And I really liked, I think you can hear Travis getting a little bit choked up when he was describing Ned, like, getting to have the choice whether or not to, like, be the hero. And I know, like, I was getting kind of choked up when I was listening to it, just because the whole thing with Ned, like, really stuck it to me. That was really nice. I can't believe that Travis was surprised that Aubrey was Sylvain when we called it, like, weeks or months before it was revealed.
We called it by, like, episode 2.
not that early, but, like, we definitely figured it out. I just thought that was really funny.
And so I thought it was interesting that Griffin was like, you know, if Aubrey had just touched Thacker sooner, would have just fixed him. Uh-huh. You know, like, and I was thinking back, like, they had all that. She had that whole scene with Thacker in the cell with the Quell, like, taking over and being like, what have we done? Why are we here? And I'm like, they never bumped elbows or something?
No, because, like, the Quell kept telling Aubrey, like, let me out.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Of this thing. I think there was a door between them the whole time. And now, in retrospect, that was Griffin trying to get the thing to happen. Mm-hmm. But it just didn't happen then. And again, that's, like, what
that's, like, the catchphrase of all of Amnesty.
Well, again, it's, like, it is this pros and cons situation. Mm-hmm. Because I've spent a lot of time in this episode, I feel like, talking about how Amnesty had these clumsy elements because of its more, like, improvised nature. But also, there's so many cool things about it because of its improvised nature. Yes. And because the players had a lot of agency. Like, I loved when they were talking about, like, Billy wasn't supposed to happen.
Yeah, I loved... the things that they did make happen, I love. As long as I'm not aware of the things that I missed out on, I'm fine.
Well, we missed out on more Stern and Barclay romance, apparently, which I'm pretty disappointed about. I liked when they were talking about Duck and Beacon's relationship, too. And I really I do like how it turned out, because Duck's whole character was, like, a deconstruction of the Chosen One trope.
Yes.
So it was really funny that in the end, he ended up just being, like, a glorified delivery boy. I think that was a really good way to put a pin in it. And I, like, you know, just thought about it some more while I was listening to this last episode.
Yeah. Well, the way I rationalized it in my head is that his whole journey, he had to go through all of it so that he could deliver Beacon to where Beacon needed to be. So mm-hmm. I feel like the Chosen One is actually Beacon, and and then Duck is just kind of there.
Duck the sidekick.
Yeah, the deliverer kind of a thing.
That my only other note, which is, like, a weird, not a very substantive thing to end this discussion on, but I thought it was funny when Travis was answering that question about how he, like, how and when he decided that he wanted Danny to be Aubrey's love interest. And he had, like, a really involved, like, explanation of, like, his thought process. But for me, like, flirting with NPCs in D&D is just, like, it's bread, like, as natural as breathing, you know? Like, it's just, like, my shit. So, like, even in that, like, first or second episode when, like, he asked Griffin if Danny's cute, I'm like, oh, this is the most natural thing in the world. I feel totally comfortable with what's going on. If I'd been him, I would have been doing the same thing, you know? Like, I don't know how... I experienced this when I started playing with a new group of people who was, like, coworkers and not my friends from... like, forever, from high school or whatever, and, like, I was trying to flirt with this NPC, and everybody seemed to be, like, really perplexed by what I was doing, and I was like, wait, is this not normal for, like, everyone else? This is part of the thing, right? We're role-playing. And that's the end of my notes.
Yeah, I mean, the one note we haven't touched yet, and I'm just gonna say it so I can tick it off my list... Leo is the new Indrid.
Yes, that's actually the last thing I had in my notes, too. Wait, really? Which I've now just checked out. Yes, and I wasn't going to say anything because I don't have anything to say about it other than I totally missed that that happened.
I did, too. I wasn't expecting that at all, but all right, cool.
We talked about this in our last episode, actually, how, like, in certain parts of the finale at the end, there was so much going on and there were so many people being mentioned. It was a little hard to keep track of everyone.
Yeah.
So I guess at some point there was this, like, this change of hands with Leo and Indrid that I just, like, my brain did not process at all because...
Yeah, basically.
I was probably thinking about Duck and Minerva hooking up or something, like one of the other batshit things that happened during the finale.
Dang, Rach, I think that's it.
I know. So I'm, like, super, super excited for graduation, especially because it's probably... It's Tuesday today.
Dude, we get it in 48 hours.
When this episode comes out, the first episode of graduation will probably be out.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be cool.
Instead of recording an episode like this, I'm just going to write my notes and then send them to you on Facebook.
I know. It's kind of a relief. It's like now I can just listen to the episode like a normal person instead of like
a maniac having to set myself
down. Yeah. Which, not going to lie, has been a pleasure, Chelsea. Thank you for doing this with me.
Now I get to listen to the episode once instead of multiple times.
Yeah.
All right. Rach.
All right.
One more time.
Yeah.
Where can people find us?
I don't think we need to do this part.
Fuck, you're right.
I think we're done. I think all we need to say is, like, Chelsea, it's been so fun doing with this with you. Everybody who's listening, thanks for listening along with us. We had a great time. We hope you did too. And I hope everybody enjoys graduation.
Bye forever.
Bye. Bye, everyone.